Well, today as we come to worship, we've also come together to remember. It is, of course, Remembrance Sunday. And as there are now more and more young people who've never lived through the kind of wartime experience that some of you have, there are sometimes questions about how important it really is to remember regularly. But I want to suggest this morning that there are many good reasons why remembering continues to be important, and I'm going to group those reasons together under four different headings. First of all, remembering increases our awareness of God, and it encourages us for today and also for the future. As Christians, we believe in a God who acts in history, a God who not only created us, but a God who cares for us and loves us and continues to be with us and involved in our affairs. The whole of the Bible, but particularly perhaps the Old Testament, tells the story of God being with his people, his chosen people, the Jewish people, through their history over many thousands of years. Being with his people in good times, in hard times, in times of suffering and in times of war and destruction and even exile. And it's in those hard times that we read that the Jewish people, sometimes led by their prophets or priests or kings, suddenly realized that their relationship with God is not what it really should be, and that they're not following and obeying God as they should. And we see them together as a nation coming, returning to God and asking for his forgiveness. Times of difficulty and times of danger, especially war times, are often the times, I think, when our awareness of God increases and we do turn to God. Wars and major disasters bring us down to size, as it were, and help us to realize our need of God. It's in those difficult times that even the atheists start to pray. One of the most significant times recorded in the Bible when God acted in history to save the Jewish people is, of course, the story of how God rescued them from slavery in Egypt and made it possible for them to cross the Red Sea safely. And God commanded his people to celebrate the day when they escaped from slavery and to keep it as a religious festival and to remember it for all time to come. And from that day to this day, annually the Jews celebrate the Passover meal, which reminds them of the way in which God did act to save his people. And each year at the Passover meal, one of the younger children in the family asks what the meal is all about, and they hear the story again. So they do something annually to ensure that they don't forget what God has done for them. And in the same way, remembering what God has done for us in our own lives and experience can surely encourage us in our own faith, especially when we remember and experience that truth that we read in Hebrews chapter 13, the fact that God in Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. The same God who helped us in times past continues to help us today. So remembering can encourage us for today and also into the future. And then secondly, remembering enables us to learn from the examples of other people's faith and courage. God can teach us a lot, I think, through the lives of others. The writer of the letter to the Hebrews encourages Christians to remember in that kind of way. Hebrews chapter 11 gives a long list of those who lived by faith, and it includes, of course, Moses and the Passover story. And then goes on in Hebrews chapter 13 to encourage us to remember your former leaders who spoke God's message to you, Think back on how they lived and died and imitate their faith. And of course, that's followed by verse 8. Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Probably the most significant part of recent history for the Solomon Islands in the Pacific, apart from the coming of the gospel, was the Second World War years. During those years, the Quiet Islands suddenly became a focal point of the whole Pacific campaign when the Japanese invaded as they pushed southwards through the Pacific towards Australia. But they didn't reach Australia, as we know from history, because they were turned back on the island of Guadalcanal. I think that until recently, many of the overseas visitors, many of the tourists who went to the Solomons, have been war veterans, particularly from Japan and from USA, but also groups from Australia and New Zealand. People who are returning there to remember. The Americans have now built a most impressive new war memorial which tells the story of the campaign in the Solomons. And it stands on top of a hill looking out over a long stretch of coast of Guadalcanal and looking right over the sea, over Iron Bottom Sound, where a major naval battle took place. When the Japanese invaded the Solomons, the Australians and the Americans organised a network of coast watchers who worked with the Solomon Islands. And these were people who were largely responsible for making possible the eventual defeat of Japan. Anybody who's watched the musical South Pacific will have heard some of the stories from that time. And this is how the book Lonely Vigil sums up their story. In 1942, Japan held the South Pacific in its grip. But on the Solomon Islands, a handful of men, a maverick crew of missionaries and gold miners, planters and traders, made their stand behind enemy lines. Against staggering odds, they relayed valuable intelligence. In hundreds of daring operations, they rescued Allied airmen and sailors from hostile waters. They helped to turn the tide of the war and left a soaring testimony of heroism against overwhelming odds. Now, all those people, of course, were kept hidden by a network of Solomon Island scouts who organised, rescued, and fought with them. It was the Solomon Islanders who were able to move about and actually carry out these operations. Perhaps the most famous rescue was the rescue of a young American patrol boat captain whose boat was rammed and cut in half by a Japanese destroyer, but who survived with almost all his crew on two tiny islands very close to where I used to live, until they were rescued by local scouts and one of the coast watchers and taken safely back to their American base. The captain was John F. Kennedy, whose story is told in a book and a film, both entitled PT-109, the number of his patrol boat. I first heard that story of how this happened from one of the Solomon Island rescuers who kept in touch with Kennedy right through Kennedy's life until he died. Without that act of courage, the world may not have had one of its best-known modern leaders. There are good acts of courage and kindness to remember, and good things can come out of remembering. In the 1970s, we had a group of veterans from New Zealand who came and stayed for a couple of weeks at Goldie College. They wanted to revisit the places where they had fought during the war. One of them had been an airman, and he'd been shot down near the island of Vella La Vella, and he was rescued and cared for by Solomon Islands. He took his wife on a long canoe journey back to Vella, and when he got there, he was absolutely thrilled to manage to find some of the people who had rescued him still alive there in that village. And the rescuers, of course, were equally surprised and excited to see him. The end result of that reunion was that several members of that veterans group returned two or three times to build some new classrooms for the village school in that village, to say thank you to those who had rescued their friend. And lasting friendships were made as a result. Remembering can also encourage forgiveness. Now, this, I think, must be one of the hardest aspects of remembering. The problem is, of course, that if remembering simply increases our dislike or hatred of the people that we were fighting against, then remembering's not going to be a very helpful experience. And yet, how hard it must be to truly forgive people who have hurt us physically, mentally, emotionally. I think two instances of more positive remembering stand out in my mind from the 1960s when I was a student in Birmingham. The first one was at a Youth for Christ meeting in Birmingham Town Hall. And the town hall was packed, literally absolutely packed, with teenagers and students. The speaker that night was the then Bishop of Birmingham, who during the war had been a prisoner of war in Singapore. And he described the conditions and some of his ill treatment at the hand of his Japanese captors. And then he told us how, after the war, unexpectedly, he had come face to face with one of the Japanese guards who had beaten him. He also explained how he was able to assure the repentant ex-guard of his forgiveness. The detailed story was very compelling indeed. You could have heard a pin drop in that crowded hall, and large groups of students and teenagers are not renowned for listening carefully. I don't remember all the details of the story now, but I do still remember being very much moved by that story now over 45 years ago when I count back. Around the same time, another group of students went to see a film about the bombing and the destruction of Hiroshima. They went to a nearby Baptist church. And everybody who went was very shocked indeed by the extent of the damage and the suffering caused to so many people. Suffering that, of course, continued far after the war had ended. But what totally shook those who just watched the film was the way in which, at the end of the film, a Japanese student stood up and asked for forgiveness of everyone in that church for the way in which the Japanese had behaved during the war. Everyone who'd been a part of that event came back very impressed and very thoughtful indeed. And in both instances, the bishop and the Japanese student were people who were following the example set by Christ himself, who, even while he was suffering the physical and the mental pain and humiliation of death on the cross, was able to pray for those who were inflicting the pain. Father, forgive them, they don't know what they're doing. I wondered at that time, and I've wondered many times since, if under similar circumstances, I would honestly be able to forgive. Certainly not in my own strength. By God's grace, maybe. And then finally, of course, remembering reminds us of sacrifice. Often during wartime, it's young men and their families who sacrifice most. The young men in two major wars have given up their lives for the freedom that we have today. Sadly, we regularly still hear of the deaths of young men and women in Afghanistan, also giving up their lives for the safety and freedom of others. And the sacrifices, of course, are not only made by those who die. There are those who return from war with injuries that affect them for the rest of their lives. During this last week, one friend of mine wrote to tell me the story of his grandfather, one Private William Stevens, who joined the army in 1916, enlisting with the Royal Engineers. He was sent to France as part of the British Expeditionary Force, and during those many battles on the Western Front, was exposed to the heavy German bombardment. The shellfire inflicted horrific injuries on those around him, and as a result, he suffered from shell shock. This is part of what's written in an article published in 1929 as a tribute to the ordinary soldier, shell-shocked but largely silent. In the hush of the 2 minute silence, while a Commonwealth mourns its mighty dead, will you spare a thought for the men who also braved Armageddon and came back broken in mind by the horrors they had seen and witnessed, the terror that froze their souls? In Flanders Fields, the poppies form a crimson pool on 100,000 corners of some foreign field that is forever England. But at home, thousands of ex-servicemen remain mentally wrecked, penniless, workless, hopeless. Today, you're paying tribute to the heroes who died. Dare you forget your debt to their comrades, the heroes who still live. Private William Stevens returned from France and spent the rest of his life in the Ministry of Pensions Hospital in Orpington, suffering from shell shock. Thankfully today, we are much more conscious of the need for help for heroes. But sadly, the sacrifices are still being made. In our Bible reading, we've been reminded of the words of Jesus. The greatest love a person can have for his friends is to give his life for them. As we remember the sacrifice of those who've lost their lives in wartime, our second Bible reading reminds us that Jesus also, when he was a young man, gave up his life for us on the cross. Jesus clearly knew well before his crucifixion what was going to happen to him. The crucifixion was not an accident. Jesus had warned his disciples several times about his coming death. He told them he would give up his life. Nobody would take it from him. We read that in the garden before his capture, Jesus asked God, his Father, if possible, to spare him from the time of suffering. But at the same time, he agreed, "Not my will, but yours, God, be done." And then in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, we heard read, Paul reminds us of Jesus' instruction for all who follow him, that we should actively and regularly remember Jesus' body broken for us and his blood shed for us to mark a new covenant, a new agreement between God and all people everywhere. And this is what we do, of course, every time we have a service of Holy Communion. We remember Jesus' sacrificial death for each one of us, Jesus' sacrifice. In times of war, both past and present, many have sacrificed their lives to enable us to enjoy the freedom and the way of life that we have today. Jesus sacrificed his life on the cross to enable us to enjoy freedom from the consequences and the power of sin and death. And by his sacrifice, Jesus opened the way to eternal life for us here and now, for all those who died in wartime and have gone before us into God's nearer presence. Let's remember all these sacrifices today. Amen.